Three, two, one. Hello, and welcome to Grierson and Leach Conversations. I am Will Leach, sans Tim Grierson, who is off doing whatever he's doing for Thanksgiving. Probably not leaving the house. Grierson doesn't like to go anywhere, ever. Except to movies, and, well, he's not really doing that anymore. Anyway, there's a long-time tradition I have, back from when I hosted the Will Leach Experience podcast on Sports on Earth. Then, when Sports on Earth closed, we did this annual Thanksgiving show on his podcast network. He hosts the Hallmark show. It's not called the Hallmark show, but it's a podcast about Hallmark movies he does with David Roth. This year, I'm honored to have back for the annual Thanksgiving conversation, Jeb Lund. Jeb Lund at Mobute on Twitter. We basically do this every year. We talk about Thanksgiving. We talk about the world. We talk about things that are going usually bad. This year, plenty to talk about, as it turns out, at this particular moment in human history. So follow him at Mobute. Follow us at Grierson Leach. I'll be back with a regular episode with Grierson. But this is our annual on Sunday. You know how it works. You listen to the show. But every year, I'm delighted to be able to do this with Jeb. It's a free-flowing conversation. We just kind of talk about whatever. Usually talk about whatever's on my mind and my worries and fears. And he has a few of his own. But it is a Thanksgiving tradition unlike any other. And unlike the Great Pumpkin and all Peanuts specials, it is not exclusively on streaming channels that you do not subscribe to. So anyway, everyone out there, follow us at Grierson Leach. You know how it goes. Send us reviews. You know how all that stuff. Say hi to Grierson for me if you see him in the Los Angeles area. But on the whole, have a great Thanksgiving. Be safe out there. We'll be back after the new year. Hey, by the way, I think the GSA lady just ascertained the election, just before I started recording this. So yay to ascertainment. Get yourself ascertained. Anyway, happy Thanksgiving, everyone. Please be safe out there, and please enjoy my conversation with Jeb Lund. But mostly, happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving, everybody!
Who let these kids in here? It would not be Thanksgiving. Actually, is it Thanksgiving? I don't know if it counts this year. But it would not be Thanksgiving if not, at least not one of my podcast platforms. I did not talk to Jeb Lund, our annual, we missed 1 year, but our annual Thanksgiving podcast. I feel like this is just another Thanksgiving like the rest of them. We keep running out of stuff to talk about. What are we going to mention this year? There's nothing happening at all. How are you?
Well, you know, if I may pause for a moment and do a 15-minute inventory of my own sort of featureless depression before answering your question, that'd be great.
Yeah, I mean, this is how literally every conversation I've had with every person has started for about 7 months. So please do not feel bad about that. I'm very accustomed to it.
I was all excited to say absolutely nothing has happened, and then I went out to run a limited errand because it's getting close to Thanksgiving, and I'm like, well, that's it. That's not good. There's too many people are going to be in the store. Like, there's a no store after noon policy at this point. Because I can usually make it to one pretty early. But I came back and my son was just like on the couch, like splayed. Mm. And I was like, that isn't good. Oh, and no. I touched his forehead and he was very hot and he had a fever of 102. And it's like, ordinarily I'd be like, I'll be fine tomorrow. But, I just spent I completely forgot we were going to do this because it was the next 2.5 hours, 3 hours. It's just like, I wonder if we are going to die.
Yeah, well, I'm glad. And for the record, just to be very clear, Jeb told me this as a reason why he would be unable to do this podcast. But I screamed at him for being weak and for not taking care of the things and of his obligations. And so he went ahead and stayed back on despite this terrifying thing happening in his household.
I believe you used the phrase, this turkey ain't gonna bowl itself.
Exactly. Yeah, but again, that's also how all of my conversations have started in the last 7 months. It's just a thing. Well, I'm sorry. I mean, are you, I don't mean to start us off in a dangerous place, but are you okay? And I mean, again, these kids get fevers. These things happen all the time, but certainly the circumstances and the contexts are a bit different this year. What are your circumstances there? Are you like, because my children are completing their second week of actual in-person school. They were in, we're here in Athens. They started in-person school 2 weeks ago. And it's been less than 2 weeks and nothing's happened, so I'm sure everything's fine.
Right.
But certainly, but your kids are not, your child is not in school, correct?
He's not. His mom's immunocompromised, not hugely, but I mean, it's enough, right? And so she is obliged to go into work 3 days a week because she works in government and, you know, somebody has to be there.
Right.
You know, when a citizen comes in, even though everything's sort of on a skeleton crew and it's limited and safer, this was just like another vector. And like, you know, we got rid of as many vectors as we could of harm to my lovely bride. And so like my gig now for the most part is like, I am the caretaker of the child at all times. Right. If she's here working from home, I'm still, you know, running interference for her, keeping him away from her. And then when she's not here, you know. If I want to work, I pretty much am not going to sleep. That's kind of when I can do it.
Yeah. But I mean, do you, this is interesting. I'm always curious to ask people this. How many times have you been tested? How many times have you been tested since all of this started?
Just once, I've never gone anywhere.
And it's funny. I wrote about this for one of my Medium pieces this week about how, you know, a little bit of the idea, the writer Benji Sarlin reacted to my piece and said that it was very much like the scene in Almost, like the last 7 months in many ways have been like the scene in Almost Famous where it looks like the plane's about to crash and everyone realizes that like, oh, I'm going to die and puts out their like their true form of who they are. And I have definitely found that during this time. I've learned a lot about myself. I've learned a lot about the people around me. Some of it good. I would argue more of it not good, but you know, one of the things I kind of argue in the piece is it's that weird thing because eventually, you know, there's going to be a vaccine. It appears to be coming sooner than we thought, though it will probably not be deployed till 2026, the way things are going. But one is on its way, and eventually, when this is over, I don't think we're going to go back to normal or anything. But eventually, when this is over, there will at least not be, you know, there won't be a need to wear masks all the time, and there won't be a need to be aware of a deadly virus that's going around. And then we will all have to know all the things that we learned about ourselves and each other in the last 7 months. The idea that the mother of one of my son's friends it looks at me like I'm an asshole when I wear a mask. Now, most people don't do that. But that's just something now I have to know about her forever. And on the other side, you know, there are people who I go for a run every day, and I have friends. I've had a friend who's like, "How can you just go outside like that? It's in the air." And now I know that about like that person. And it doesn't mean that I like. And I'm sure I've changed. I'm drinking a lot more. I couldn't help but notice. So like, you know, there's certain things that I have changed in this as well. And I'm curious because you know, I feel like you. A regular, you know, dude with family walking around the planet like me, learning in the middle of all this as well. Have you found that, like, there are certain things that you've learned about your friends and neighbors, positive or negative, during this that maybe you just now know forever?
You know, I think I haven't been really as surprised as I thought I would be. I think most people kind of fell into predictable patterns of, you know, communal risk assessment. The more indulgent people of my acquaintance continued to be indulgent, but everybody kind of like fit in their patterns. It wasn't like a moment where I found myself like throwing down with somebody about like how I can't take you seriously anymore because of this or that, with the exception of like being out in sort of using the communal play areas in my neighborhood with my son and then seeing who didn't take control of their kids. But these weren't people that I was like close with. It's more like now it was like, well, you know, now your kid isn't just somebody I can run into. It's like he's somebody who can run into my kid and collide with him and then a germ plume goes up.
So do you like, I mean, how do you feel? Like, honestly, like what are your, I feel like this has been such a big thing and I'm just excited that we have this conversation every year. And I feel like it's a little bit of a state of what's going on in the world. And eventually we start talking about cooking. You start talking about cooking because I literally can't even microwave water. And so for me, one of the things that's there's kind of two things to like really check in on. And one is that like kind of personal idea of how you are doing and how your family is doing. And I'm glad that you've gotten a scare literally right before you talk to me. That's something to mark for next year's podcast. But, you know, there's stuff that's going on in your family and things are going on. But also, you know, the way we have collectively reacted to this and what that says about us. And both of those things are hard to deal with. And to the point when you add in the clumsy coup or whatever's happening right now, I have found that whenever I try to talk to people, and obviously there are politically engaged people that want to talk to me about it, but the average person just does not want to fucking deal with it right now because it really, like, they're overloaded. The election was overloaded enough. And I'm curious, like, just generally, how are you holding up throughout all of this? Because it feels like so many of our conversations, I went back and listened to one the other day, and I'll be honest, most of the time we are quite alarmed. We're quite alarmed by what's going on. And now it feels like we should have been less alarmed, because now is the time to really be alarmed. It feels like in so many ways it's overwhelming because there's so many things landing on us at once. How are you holding up through that?
You know, it's funny. I think watching a lot of my friends' reactions, I kind of feel like a lot of people felt dislocated because they were acclimating to life as I had experienced it, because so many of my colleagues aren't here. They're in New York. And so it was easy to kind of, you know, to see people doing things via social media from afar and feel very jealous, and like seeing friend, you know, mutual friends hanging out at collective events I couldn't go to. And now kind of we're all in the same boat. And so I think the dislocation in that respect of like seeing how tenuous even like things that felt really valuable and emotionally kind of validating or, you know, constructive in our lives, like seeing how tenuous that is wasn't as stunning to me, because like to a certain extent, you know, so much of my social life was very contingent. In terms of like the political dislocation, like, I mean, I don't even know where to begin with that. in terms of like, cause I do go from like moment to moment of like, you know, sort of giggling at, you know, the Keystone coup kind of vibe,
right.
To just the, I don't know, like marinating in the same sort of like intensifying anxiety and or sense of like there being diminishing avenues for escape that I've been feeling since 2015. So I'm not, I mean, you catch me in like one 20 minute period, I might be like, the sky is falling, and another I might be like cautiously optimistic. It's really, it's hard. It's hard to get a gauge on all of it. I mean, I've been talking a lot with our friend David Roth and mm-hmm. for our bonus podcast to kind of like do a kind of mental health check and just sort of see how he's experiencing things in New York. And like the one constant is just anxiety, but it's just, it's a question of how much.
Well, yeah. And I think that was one of the things that was interesting about the Saturday that the election was called, where there really was this explosion of joy that, by the way, would have seemed absolutely insane like a year ago. And like, wow, look how happy all these young, cool urban people in urban centers are to see Joe Biden become the president. Like, it's kind of a dislocating anyway. But to see that kind of joy released, and almost immediately go right back to anxiety and to go right back to, I think the Washington Post called it like everyone clenched back up again by Sunday and have not unclenched since. And to me, that's actually one of the things I generally worry about all of this. I understand that in many ways, not just pandemic related, that there is no going back to normal. It's also a good reminder, as I learned when I went back to listen to our old podcast, normal sucked. Normal was not great. So the idea of getting back to that place, but certainly to be able to, you hear this all the time, the idea of it'd be nice to like have a day where I don't think about anything that the president is doing, and that general kind of idea. And while on one hand that feels a little almost irresponsible, because that's something we should always be paying attention to, even when it's not, when there's not a lunatic in the Oval Office. But on the other hand, it sounds quite refreshing. It sounds like kind of comforting in a way that maybe it shouldn't be, but nevertheless, I think will be for a lot of people. But I feel like I haven't had, like, even the idea of like all the anxiety leading the election, you got like one day of it kind of, and then it's just gotten a little tighter and a little tighter and a little tighter ever since then. There was many, many signs that this was going to happen, or at least going to be attempted to happen. And while it's, you know, as many have pointed out, if there weren't idiots like Giuliani and the other lawyers, the other television lawyers involved in this case, this could have gone a lot worse, or if the election would have been a little bit closer. So I understand that there's an existential threat and a scary threat and like often a physical threat that you see in these things. But I still feel like I'm desperate for some sort of, I just need to take a breath and like not think about this shit for a while. Cause you're right. It's been 5 years. Would you could say the start of this was the escalator? Like, do you think that, or was it when it became clearer that it was not just a joke and he was going to be kept? I'm curious, this anxiety that you're talking about, would you say that it started then? Has it gone in waves, or where would you land on that?
You know, it wasn't the escalator. So that's like June, 2015.
Right.
And it probably wasn't until, like, the polling didn't go down. I think it was probably around like that December or that November where all the, like, the temptation to put at least one paragraph in idiomatic Trumpian or Trumpese kind of wore off.
Yeah. Maybe that, everyone was doing that for a while, right? They would respond. I think you and I had a conversation over Twitter one time where we're talking in Trumpese and we're like, ha, 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 ha. And now we literally live in that place.
Yeah. And like, poor Dave, like Dave used to be able to periodically do tweets like that, but now when he does it, and you know, it's fabulous, everyone loves it, it's very, very exclusive, you know, it the first like 500 replies are everybody doing their own kind of like hack take on it, because everybody, it's just so acclimated. And at this point, I'd rather watch, like, what's his name, the James Austin Johnson guy, like,
yeah
let him
do the Scooby-Doo thing, right
yeah. Weird Al, don't we? We love Weird Al.
It is funny. There was that for those who don't know who he's referring to, and this is the he's a young guy. He's a young comedian in Los Angeles who basically has cracked. I think Adam Sternberg wrote a good piece about this. He basically cracked that the only way to impersonate Trump now is to forget everything until now. Like, he's not that New York real estate anymore. He's just this old crappy Borscht Belt comic,
right?
That's just like ranting and raving whatever he can get.
Well, and the thing that he gets is like, it's not the fact that you can remember the like, oh, it's you know, very beautiful and very exclusive and everybody loves it that makes it funny. It's like the fact that it's the completely broken brain rationale that he comes up with for everything. Cause he is innately a funny person. I mean, he's probably the funniest president of my lifetime. And like, Obama was not a slouch at being witty, but like just so genuinely idiosyncratic, and like taking that mind frame and like, okay, well, now I'm going to break down whether I think Weird Al is like a fair deal from a creative standpoint in re-ASCAP. You know, that's like a, I mean, who's going to be like, well, he's very unfair to Mr. Coolio, you know, like, okay, I like
sure.
It.
How, I have to say, before we get to the next thing, I think I missed this last year. You know, David, you obviously do a podcast with David, and I've known David for a long time. But I have to say, I have, in the last 2 years in particular, I've gone from like admiring the work that he does about Trump to actively pitying him. Like, to actively pitying David, to have to follow, like, at a certain level, like, to like, I feel just for my soul, I have to not only shut it off, but like, even when Trump's talking, to disassociate myself from what is happening and what he's saying. And I feel like what I think one of the reasons that David Roth has kind of exploded over the last couple of years is he, like, there's something, I think his universal theory of Trump is correct, but what is said amount of research that's like doing your doctoral dissertation on like dog shit. Like, just like, you just have to spend like your entire academic career waiting in dog shit, and great, you got the degree out of it and you're really, really educated in the fact, but at what cost? And I feel that way about David in a lot of ways.
Well, I don't want to put, I'm not really putting words in his mouth, because I'm just gonna paraphrase something he said multiple times on our bonus podcast, which is just like, you know, he just has to keep writing the same column over and over again. And he's talented enough that most people don't really notice that he's writing the same column over and over again, because there's really only one take on Trump. And then you can extrapolate that for almost anything. And like, I went through the same thing at our abortive Howard Megdahl and et cetera, the 50 States of Blue website, because I was their Trump columnist. And like twice a week, I had to be like, well, which side of like the dichotomy of, you know, of the duality of Trump are we falling on? Is it like the Vegas Führer, or is it President Grandpa? Is it like wannabe, you know, strongman, or is it like you know, I am not a crank, but there are three too many states. Please remove them. You know, that kind of guy. And, you know, I wrote it for only a couple of months and I was just absolutely burned out. And the fact that Dave has managed to make it, keep it fresh and like keep people reading the same point over and over. I mean, that's what's so frustrating is like, nobody really needed to say anything more about this guy after 2015. We all got it covered. There's more data that confirms your priors, but we don't really need a whole lot more. But like, there's this bizarre insistence that we have to keep reevaluating him. And like, part of it is just obviously like CNN, et cetera, trying to create, you know, content of like, is he turning the corner as a human being? No,
that's not happening. So when you watch the results, where did you, I'm assuming, I don't think you went to a Crowley party. I assume you watched them at home. Take me through that, just the process of that night and the next couple of days after that. Cause I was home and I got freaked out by Miami-Dade like a lot of people did. But then when Fox News called Arizona, I felt like, okay, I feel like this is probably going to be okay. It's just going to take a while now, but I did not anticipate this amount of while.
That was pretty much my thought process. I think by midnight I was like, all right, well, I think he's probably going to, you know, unless there's some chicanery that is not going to be a matter of like waiting, somebody else is going to do something and my watching isn't going to change anything whatsoever. But like, you know, barring anything like that, you know, Biden's probably going to win. You can go like toggle over to Tubi and fall asleep watching an old Mystery Science Theater 3000, which I
think. Oh, it's a good call. So what do you think now? I mean, like, what do you think of the fact that, you know, I think like a lot of people, I think I thought Biden was going to win, but I was hoping for a larger repudiation than what we got. I don't know if I thought that was going to happen, but certainly I think that like, I'm curious, obviously the polls were off in a lot of ways, but I also just like really felt that a lot of people, because they wanted it so badly, they wanted that he's so appalling and so stupid that it just, it's hard to wrap your mind around the fact that anyone would vote for the person, let alone 70 million people. And so there's been like all this like sturm and drang about like how we handle this and so on. You know, on one hand, I would say 3/4 of my family, anytime I ever write anything on Facebook, which is not very often, but it's usually like promoting something that I'm proud of, just wait. And I will have, there will be several people with the last name Leech who will come in and say, I've lost touch with Matt Toon. I've become part of the liberal elite. Mm-hmm. And so obviously I know many people have done this, but it still feels like, how have you wrapped your mind around that still, that like 2016 was, you could talk yourself into be like, it was a mistake. Hillary was this. So there was things, just people weren't taking it seriously. How do you wrap your mind around this and continue to being around your friends? You know, as someone like you, unlike me, who you being from a red state, unlike me here in Georgia. But no, I'm curious, like how do you wrap your mind around it, to be honest?
Partly it's just being used to it. I mean, I'm trying to think of, you know, to statewide office, we've elected Nikki Fried and Bill Nelson. And Bill Nelson was already in office, you know, and like in my voting lifetime. Democrats don't win here, so I'm just so used to it. I started to get excited about the possibility that there would be kind of a big wave. I wasn't super surprised that there wasn't, but I guess just because I felt that jaded. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, people do weird things all the time. Like, I think there were a lot of people who probably saw how well Biden was doing in, you know, being ahead, and they split their tickets. So that's why Democrats didn't do as well. Like, people like voting against, you know, sending a message to the Republican Party, but then immediately checking the Democrats to keep them from ever actually doing anything right afterward. It's just a really fun tick. So that could have been it. You know, the economy was, for most people, it was fairly good. Like, if you ignored a huge debt bomb and the fossil fuel industry and like a lot of other places, just in terms of what people are seeing in their day-to-day lives, they probably had slightly more in their paycheck. They might have had slightly more expenses that they don't really see up front, but that tends to favor incumbency. You know, I don't know. Like, I guess I've just acclimated to finding ways to understand my disappointment. I wasn't doing too well before this. I mean, like, the two main things I wrote this year were, like, both for Luke O'Neill's newsletter, and they amounted to, like, you know, 8,000 words of, like, here's why I'm really depressed. So so all this also kind of gets filed under the same, like, blue light filter that one-third of Soderbergh's Traffic was filmed in. It's like, oh, okay. This is, I'm just living in Michael Douglas world.
It does. I do feel... like, particularly when it comes to time during the pandemic, just the notion. I'm curious, where were you when everything landed? Because I was actually in Florida on March. I think March 11th is generally considered the unofficial start of the when we have the parade someday. They'll all be on March 11th, I would guess. It feels like the unofficial start when that was the night of Rudy Gobert and Trump's sniffly error-filled speech. The very wow, this is really going to happen, and this is the person that's in charge moment. And then right after that, that was when Tom Hanks. That night, where were you at that night?
I don't even remember. We were already reconciled to that. I'm starting the end of February, just because, you know, like you, I spend a lot of time seeing what journalists are talking about on social media, which means that I'm anxious about things a week before most people. Yeah. And so there was a mounting sense of, like, this is not going to go well. And then just to sort of, like, a well-honed Floridian sense of, like, you want to be at Costco before this starts. So I'd been going, I would say, almost like every other day to a store somewhere to stock up on things. So like our, like by probably the week before that had started, before the Gobert thing, I probably had like my freezer stuffed with like vacuum seal, like stewed meats. Cause like, well, you know, the meat packing is going to just end in a month. Right. Like,
you'd think.
So that was the big plan. That was like, okay, well, we got to make sure that we've got a, you know, stew beef for, cause we're going to need chili in the future.
To me, one of the things about that too is you knew it was going to be bad, and we were actually in Florida. We were on, it was spring. It was my kid's spring break from school, so we were visiting my wife's father in Florida, and it became very clear that this was happening. I just wanted to like get home. Like at that point, and now it feels like, oh, I was in another place. I should have stayed there a little longer.
Why didn't we drive back?
Yeah, like, oh, why didn't I just, like, you know, I had the rare moment where I was not in this house. I should have at least looked around a little bit. But because, you know, but for me, when that happened, I still, and maybe that I was fooling myself, but I still felt, okay, like, first off, professionally, I was like, okay, sports-wise, like, there's a lot of things that aren't going to happen now. I need to make sure I remain useful for a little bit when there's not going to be any sports. But I still felt like, you know what? By fall. I don't know why I would think that. To be honest, it makes no sense now that I look back on it. But I do think there was a collective thought that while this was bad and we were going to have to batten down the hatches for a while, you know, this was the time of flatten the curve. And like, this is, it's funny because now is the time that we desperately need to be flatten the curve. And I haven't seen that hashtag in a very long time. And I guess I just thought that, if obviously foolishly, but I did feel that there would be some sort of collective action. And when I look back at this time, I know that I shouldn't have thought that Trump would be good at this, but I will confess, I did not actually think that he would be this bad. I honestly didn't. And that's not a credit to him. It just felt like, frankly, he's just so lazy that it felt like he would just go, you know what? You guys got it. I can still play golf, right? I can still tweet. I can still do that stuff. Someone got, and I think in the beginning that was almost the hope, right? Like, far from me to praise Mike Pence, but I think that was the idea that Pence was going to run the coronavirus task force, and there would be, you know, just the normal shit that happens when there's something like this. And I really just thought this would be something that we'd be dealing with for a while, but there'd be the strong action and we'd be able to fire through it. And it's funny because it really feels, and I'm curious your thoughts about this, because on one hand, obviously we could not possibly be doing worse. On the other hand, you know, I mean, honestly, that's a good question. Is there? That's a good question. Actually, before we start, I can't even come up with a scenario where we possibly could have done worse, right? Like, and I don't mean just with the response, with the virus response, even with the economy, right? Like the fundamental notion of, well, you can't get the economy back until you get the virus under control, and that fundamental obvious thing just was ignored at every notion. And I you see the way people are acting now, and I don't feel like they were acting that like that in March and April. I still think there was like a little hope then that this wouldn't be as bad. Did you feel this way, or did you feel like this is going to be a year and a half?
Well, so I think I'm, it's probably unfair to ask me because I was a history major before I wound up doing this. So from one lucrative field to the next. But, you know, if it's any guide, and it usually is, we're not going to learn, you know, or if we do learn, we're going to learn the last lesson so hard that we refuse to learn another, right? We're going to come up with our own viral version of the Maginot line to keep this from happening and then like completely fail to account for anything else. I mean, it's just the way that things happen. And so like right when we started, when we went in lockdown for whatever perverse reason, I was like, well, now is the time to figure out how to, you know, digitally get books from the library. So I'm going to get like a lot of, I read a bunch of stuff to like scare the shit out of me. I was like, oh, I'll finally read Helter Skelter. And, you know, I was reading some other true crime stuff. And then I finally read the 1918 pandemic book that I guess scared the shit out of W. Mm-hmm. And that the everybody booked the guy who wrote it. I didn't care for it particularly. It like had a lot of a muscular long form prose disease in the sense that like it wasn't as bad as there's a book, I think. It's a book on the Black Plague, and I can't remember what it's called, but like almost every chapter ends where it's, the origin of the Black Plague is Yersinia pestis, and it's like at the end of every chapter, it's like, but there in the corner, why pestis was waiting. And like this book has a lot of that, like where you're in the room with the plague. It's like you're in the room with the doctor. He looked through the microscope, but the influenza wouldn't reveal itself. And like, and I just sort of did the kind of motion to it. But, you know, one of the things that hammered home was like, these people knew what to do and they didn't do the right thing. And we were going to do the same thing. And so I was just like, I'll see everybody in 2021.
Hopefully.
Hopefully. I hope, yeah.
Yeah.
But I mean, like, if you're talking about like the altered perception, you know, like my area is pretty good. People are still on board. People are still participating. I think 80% when they polled Americans right after Trump said there would be no nationwide lockdown and he wasn't going to go ahead and, you know, invoke the Defense Production Act, all this stuff. Like you still had like 80% of people complying. And I think if you are seeing more people traveling this holiday, I think like a huge portion of that is the casualties of their wasted cooperation. You know, we're not a country that's good at collective action. You got a lot of collective action from people. And then the leadership that was supposed to capitalize on our patience squandered it. And so I think a lot of people are like, well, fuck it. What are the odds?
I think that's right. And I've talked about things being like oh, that feels like a May conversation rather than a November conversation, which is a crazy thing to say because same virus with like a lot more people walking around with it. But I just think it is, you know, I think we all found ourselves, or maybe you didn't, but I feel like most people found themselves as this went along being like, okay, well, like I can't actually, like for me, it was my kids. That the moment where I started to break a little bit and I started to, for example, like eat outside, like have friends over and socially distance drinks on the porch, as opposed to the first month and a half where I was like, can I get it through the computer? Like, I don't even want to like chat with anyone. So, and when I started doing that, to be honest, that's
the phone.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. Just randomly wiping down my wife's face every once in a while. Just, you never know.
Yeah. It's like face off. It's
yeah. Yes. Yes. But anyway, so, the thing that started that I wouldn't say, like, I'm still very careful but like one of the things that changed, at least made me alter a little bit, was the idea for me, we're very lucky. We don't have, there's no one with the immunocompromised. My parents are here, but like we've kind of kept it. We're all in like the same kind of circle. But generally speaking, it was watching my children. And like, you know, my kids are my older son turns 9 tomorrow. Happy birthday, William. And my younger is 6. And I just started doing the math and I was realizing, geez, man, like you want to freeze. Like, I feel like the first 2 months we were all just kind of frozen in place and just kind of like, okay, let's just hunker down, do what we're supposed to do. And then when we come out, we'll be in a better place. And once you realize, A, no, this is going to be a long time. But two, like, I consider, like, I've had years of my life where I have no idea if an interesting thing happened at all. Like I just look back at it and like, I would say like at 33, I don't know what happened when I was 33, from 33 to 34, probably nothing particularly interesting or valuable. But the point is that like, there are years, because I'm old now. I'm in my 40s. There are years I can lose a year here or there, and it's not my favorite thing, but I can handle it. But then I would look at what happened with my kids, and I would say, wow, he is missing like a large portion of his life. He is a child. I cannot just lock this child inside. I can't just pause and wait for him to, like, just wait and have him, like, oh, he grew a foot in the middle of this, but he still has to be in the same place. Opening us up to the world in a very, very small way, but being more casual about things, I'll be honest, was probably more about the kids, I would say, than necessarily me.
Yeah, that's been my calculus as well. I mean, I'm by nature a homebody. I like cooking. This has been not too much of a disruption from my normal, you know, shopping and cooking and just staying in and consuming media habits. But, you know, my son, he hasn't had a whole lot of practice in being a person, and I can just feel the gulf widening between him and kids like yours who have each other to play with and, you know, peers to negotiate with on the peer-to-peer level, not in within this sort of like a, you know, authoritarian family structure wherever. I mean, he's just like a very unequal person without a lot of distractions. And I really can kind of feel like it, just seeing him day to day and knowing that he's always sort of within reach of my ears or my mouth makes me feel bad for him and his lack of autonomy. I mean, he should be able to just go run around like an idiot in some other kid's backyard and just not have to deal with his dad for 2 hours.
So you've been doing school the whole time. I said, our kids just got back 2 weeks of school here. New York just shut down. I have to say, I've totally become that asshole, by the way, the thing that people used to do to me when I lived in New York, I lived in New York for 13 years. And when I see people talking about something in New York as if they're the only people that it's happening to, I know that I used to do that, but now I hate it when they do that. Like, to see them like, oh my God, like the way that school's being handled is really a disaster. Like, yeah, I know. We start school at the beginning of August down here. We've been seeing this for a while. But to me, that's part of it too, because our older son handled school fine. He's in the third grade. He is autonomy. He's good. But like our younger one, he could not pay attention. He just, the iPad learning was not a way to, it also, it's not helpful that like my wife and I are very anti-devices for the kids, stupidly, because like we're going to hold that off. But it still feels like we want to hold it off as long as we can anyway. And so to watch them not to watch, particularly the younger one, and he started like getting crankier, and just it was just a very, very bad situation. And we were very lucky because like we have regular wireless and we have all of these things, but it was really just a mess across the board. Are you having more luck? Are you doing more hands-on? Because that was probably another part of the problem too, is my wife and I both work out of home and are very, very busy, and we're probably not able to focus as much time sitting there with them as maybe some parents were. Have you had a better experience with virtual schooling than we did?
Probably not. I mean, the thing is, he's in kindergarten. So if he comes out of this really just like knowing letters, he's
pretty annoying. Right, right.
And he's already kind of teaching himself to sound out words on his own. He's got a number of them that he's memorized already, and he's already doing basic math. And like, we bought all these sort of workbooks on with multiple exercises that involved, you know, solving things and drawing and, you know, all the sort of fun workbook stuff you used to do as a kid. And, without even really looking carefully at the books, I just plunked one down and he blitzed through like 11 pages and was like, oh, it's the first grade one. Oh, okay.
Oh, that's
well, no
good.
Wonder these seemed interesting. Because all the ones that are for, you know, his age group are dull. But unfortunately, you know, we both work or attempt to. It's really hard for me to concentrate. And so a lot of times I'm more just there with him. But there's a lot more device learning than I would like. I mean, thankfully, it's actually pretty good. Like a lot of his phonics learning has come from just doing those games where you're sort of like trying to make the right, you know, the right sound blow up or whatever, like picking a ch over a psh or something. So they're not awful, but I mean, I do feel guilty. I mean, I like it's impossible not to feel like I'm just turning him into a pod person.
Yeah, because parenting is really stressful anyway. and so to have this, I've said a few times during this, but like I almost wish my kids were either 10 years older or 5 years younger. Like I've had friends who have actually had children during the pandemic, which I'm sure the birthing itself was quite stressful to go through. But at the, you know, I mean, you remember this, the first 3 months, you don't go anywhere. And so it's kind of the ideal, like, oh, good, I know I can keep them safe here and I don't want to go anywhere anyway. But having them be at a time where, you know, I mean, this is a pivotal time, you know, for kids, and to have that. And I'm already preparing. I'm sure there's going to be whatever millennial / Gen Y Z name that they give to these kids in 10 years, they're going to be pandemic kids, right? Generation P or whatever they want to, generation COVID or whatever they call them. It does feel like that's going to be, if like our job is just to like try to steer them as much as we can to pretend like it was a normal time. Cause I can't imagine what it's going to feel like for these kids when they're like 25 to be like, holy shit, do you remember that? Remember how like dad drank all the time? Like, remember that? And I'm like, yeah, that was all of it. Actually, that wasn't just the pandemic. Yeah. But, you know, that's kind of what I mean, though. I mean, it just feels, it's hard for me to see them and know that this massive thing is happening. One thing that I have no control of and cannot help them with. So I'm generally helpless to like, I can protect them from the virus, but I can't protect them from all the things that are happening because of it. And I worry I'm screwing them up in the first place. So I feel like most of my pandemic worries have actually not been about politics, or they've been that and not the response. It's just like, oh my God, there are people in this house who like, they're going to, I'm responsible for them and I don't actually know what to do at all right now.
I think this is probably a severe issue if you're somebody who believes in anthropogenic climate change, because you're living through the complete failure of the minor pre-dress rehearsal for reckoning with your own power as an individual versus this global machine, you know, this global literal force that like against which you and I can do nothing. And so like seeing myself powerless to effectuate any sense of safety and normalcy for my son, hits a lot harder, because it's like, how much of the rest of my life is going to be a different version of this? You know, like looking at the climate refugee maps for where is it that you're going to need to move in the United States? And if you live in the South or in the Southwest, you especially should probably go. And so sitting here thinking not only about this, but then thinking like, well, when is it that we're going to need to move? You know, how much of a normal childhood can he have here before we've got to get him out ahead of the waves of economic dislocation that come from, you know, people in the United States being internal climate refugees. I don't know. It's impossible for me to think about this and not just see it telescoping as like another pandemic in 10 years or in 20 years, being the inhospitability of like whole sections of the country.
Yeah. You know, my editor at New York Magazine is David Wallace Wells. So I get the shit from him every single time that I talk to him. So thanks, Jeb. Thanks you're right. Of course. You're right. Of course. And, but I'm just trying to get through Thanksgiving. Speaking of Thanksgiving, how many people are you hosting? We looked at the map and thought no more than 25. We felt like above 25 it put our risk too high, to have a bad time. So we limited it to 17 or 18. Are you doing a Zoom Thanksgiving? Are you doing anything like that? Or you guys are you just having pretty much a regular Thursday?
I'm glad that you asked. We're having 50 people here, but we're kicking them all out at 9:59.
That's a good idea. That should happen every Thanksgiving anyway.
That's how we're going to be safe. No, I mean, I don't know if we're going to Zoom anything. I was actually thinking, well, all right, don't be an idiot, don't go at Thanksgiving, but why not go for a couple weeks before Christmas to your mom and stepdad, they have a big RV that they can park in their front yard and that I could stay in while we waited. My son and I could wait for our test results to get through. And I was really kind of on the verge of doing that. And then just day after day of, you know, the CDC and everybody going like, please don't travel. And then my thinking like, well, you know, a bunch of people are going to ignore that. And then on the day that I am traveling, they're going to be the people out, like they will have just spent several days incubating and they're going to be the ones like breathing all over the gas pump. Don't go. So there was like this brief thing where I thought maybe I'll give my wife a break because we, you know, we don't have any family in the area and she has not had a day where she has been able to be free of her child since February when we last had a babysitter. So that was my going to be my like pre-Christmas gift, but no, there's nothing.
Yeah. Wonderful. My parents are in the circle, I guess, already. So as much as they can be. So we've been able, because I mean, they're here. And I feel like that's been the other stress of this, right? I've wrote a piece about how like Gen X are kind of typically in the middle on this, that like we're worried about our parents physically and our kids mentally and nobody gives a shit about what we're doing, which is probably fair. But, you know, I think that Thanksgiving to me, you know, it feels... The thing I think about Thanksgiving this year is a thing I think in a lot of ways about all of this, which is how much, like, do you think this will make next Thanksgiving better? Or do you think it'll just make it different? Because like, the thing we always talk about is like, wow, when I get a chance, I'm going to go do this and I'm going to go do this. I'm going to go do this. I'm going to meet this friend. I'm going to go to a bar. And I found myself weirdly missing those terrible week old olives they give you at bar when you sit down at a bar. And there's like, they're really like, I don't know why I would eat those. Like, who knows how long those that like, I'm sure they're out there buying fresh olives every day. Like at least the nuts, you know, anyway, the point is I find myself like weirdly missing stuff like that. And so we all say that we're going to go do this and we're going to go all do these things. And so for me, like the idea, like, well, maybe next Thanksgiving after we've all skipped this Thanksgiving, we'll all hold our family that much tighter. But I really feel like we'll probably just go back to yelling at each other next year, like they do generally. So I guess that's my question for you. I'm kind of curious to have you to close on. Do you think, putting aside how climate change is going to kill us all, that when vaccines come or we get over the hump on this, is it going to be like the stage after the baby boom after World War II, where everyone's excited and having a great time? Or do you think we'll just be stuck in this morass of all hating each other? Because I feel like this, the vaccines should get really excited about like the idea that there's a light at the end of this tunnel, but I don't feel like people are acting that way.
You know, before we go, I have a bone to pick with you.
Uh-oh, I'm sorry. I take full responsibility for my actions.
No, I just, you know, we went on the Great American Pop Culture Quiz Show. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And you won because you got like all the ones that I knew. Mm-hmm. And then I lost because I pick like just something that's, you know, turns out to be nothing but like Oscar songs. Just a killer. And it's the first day. So every, you know, like if anybody ever goes back to the very first episode of that podcast from forevermore, it's just going to be me just getting just hosed at the end. It's brutal.
Yeah, I was honored to defeat you. It felt good. You and Jessica from the Fug Girls were the guests on there. And I smoked both of you. I ended up going on. They had me and Grierson on and Grierson killed me. So now I have to live with that the rest of my life. But that is a great podcast by our old friends at Extra Hot Grade. I always love when you're on Extra Hot Grade. Tara and the crew are like my and Sarah and are my favorite people in the world. But Jeb, you remain one of my favorite people in the world. I'm honored that we do this. We had a little tech issue, so we didn't get to go as deep into things as we might have. Though frankly, the way we were talking, did anyone really want to hear it? Did you really want to hear us going down the sad place? How are you generally? Do you feel like you're going to be okay? Forget we going to be okay. Are you going to be okay?
You know, I think so. Like, it's weird. Like, ever since 2016, I kind of have kept waiting for the thing that's sort of like, well, this is going to turn the corner. I'm going to feel better. You know, but I keep trying, you know, something else every year, adding some new good habit. And, you know, I feel fairly positive about this one. it's just really difficult, like, to get a baseline on how things are working. And I think that's probably, you know, a problem that's not unique to me. It's like, how do you figure out what's wrong with your shit when all your environmental, you know, conditions are thrown completely out of whack? You know, one of the things that, like, I've been worried about is, like, being, you know, being depressed. It's easy to be scatterbrained. It's easy to be poorly managed, and like ADHD and depression kind of go hand in hand. And like, really trying to get a handle on that right when some, like, the world dumps your 6-year-old in your house 24 hours a day for a year is that's tough.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I think I'm doing good. But I mean, like, we'll have to sort of let everything return to something like normalcy for me to get an idea of, like, whether I was just doing well considering.
Well, I look forward to us doing this podcast next Thanksgiving and you being like, you know what I miss? Thanksgiving 2020. That turned out to be so much better than where we are now. That'll be a fun place.
You know, we didn't have any sandbags in 2020. That was what was so great. You didn't have to go dig for anything before.
Right. That was back before all the probing. All right, Jeb. Jeb Linda, as always, thank you for doing this. Have a wonderful Thanksgiving, you and yours. And I hope everyone is healthy and well over there, and you hang in there, okay? Thanks for doing this, and best to you and yours. Godspeed. Let's see what happens. Let's see if any of us make it to next year.
Yeah, let's. Thank you again.
Be safe, man.
You too.
Happy Thanksgiving, everybody!
Who let these kids in here?